Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. My name is Michael Gray and I'm excited to be joined tonight by Cameron from Murphy's. Welcome, Cameron.
Welcome. Thank you, Michael.
Great to have you on.
I'm glad to be here.
Great. Great. Cameron, can you tell us a little bit about the beautification that's going on at the monastery?
I sure can. We're doing some really exciting projects right now. We've planted there's a garden all around the perimeter, a bed all around the perimeter of the upper garden.
Uh-huh.
And we've planted zinnias and dahlias and marigolds and cosmos and morning glories.
Wow.
And they're all just coming up and looking really beautiful.
Oh, wow. Wow,
yeah.
That's great. Just in time for a lot of retreats in August.
Just in time, yeah, yeah. And there's also a lot of plants that are growing in and around that bed that just kind of came on their own. There's California poppies.
Uh-huh.
And then there's these plants called datura, which are kind of large desert plants that have a big, beautiful white flower on them that's kind of like
uh-huh.
a big trumpet flower.
Yeah. And are those particularly good flowers for the climate there at the monastery?
Well, they're doing well, and they the morning glories we grew from seeds. We actually
uh-huh.
started them as little seeds and soaked
yeah.
them and got a little sprout and then started them in flats and then moved them into the garden
wow.
and have been nursing them along, and they've been just thriving, and they've gone all the way, some of them, up the 8-foot fence.
Oh, my goodness.
And, yeah. And the deer have discovered them. Sadly. I remember
uh-huh.
Sherry saying there's nothing sadder than a Buddhist with ants. Well, I think a Buddhist with plants that have come 8 feet from seeds and are now being eaten by a deer is kind of a sad thing, too, because I can't tell which is, you know, I love the deer, you know, and I know they
yeah.
need something to eat.
Yeah.
So they're hungry right now, and they have found the morning glories.
Wow. You know, I know for me that would be a lot of letting go of expectations and how I think things are supposed to be.
Absolutely, yeah. The very first morning glory blossom was a story in that vein. The very first one came on a tiny plant. I would never have guessed it would blossom that small. And it came on my birthday.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was so excited. And, yeah.
Like
and
a birthday
so, but I
present.
Didn't, it was like a birthday present, and I kind of took it personally, you know, like it was really kind of a special gift.
Yeah.
I didn't have my camera, so I came the next day all excited to take a picture of the
yeah.
very first morning glory, and I couldn't find it. And I looked and I looked and I thought, what's going on here? The deer not only had eaten the blossom, it had eaten the entire plant.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah, so there was a lesson in letting go and taking things personally. So, yeah. It's really been exciting for me to, I don't know, I haven't been this excited about something as long as I can remember, just seeing
uh-huh.
these things grow and nurturing them and taking care of them. And, yeah, like you say, having to kind of trust that their outcome is not really up to us, you know?
Yes, yes. And as you talk about that nurturing and taking care of, I'm projecting that there's a lot of that going on inside as well as with the flowers.
Yes, yes, that's indeed true.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
There's what? Another project, too, we've started on a hillside. We're planting periwinkles.
Uh-huh.
Which until I only have associated that word periwinkle with the color blue.
Yes.
I never knew it was a plant. And it turns out that the little flowers this plant has are that color, and that's why the color is periwinkle, and it's kind of like a, they're kind of like a viney ground cover, it looks like, at this point.
Uh-huh.
And so we're planting those and kind of doing a little modest landscaping on the hillside, kind of changing the dirt a little bit.
Yes.
I have never done anything like that in my life, and it is just so exciting.
Wow.
It's like kind of, I don't know what it's like, but it's very exciting.
Yes. Yes. Wonderful. Cameron, and that for me is kind of related to my next question, which is, what is it like to work at the monastery?
Well, it is. I don't know how I got so fortunate to have the opportunity to work at the monastery. I work every day in the privileged environment, which, you know, encourages one to look within all the time and to examine everything and see how it is that we cause ourselves to suffer.
Yes.
And so, you know, many times, many of us practice and we go to work in an environment that doesn't really support our practice.
Yes.
And I go to work in an environment that not only supports it, it pretty much requires it.
Yes. Yes, I can see that.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, it's, on some days, if you would ask and conditioning would answer the question you just asked, it would be a rough job.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
But because of the practice that's involved, I just feel like I'm doing things and experiencing parts of myself that I don't know I would have ever gotten to without having this this job and this environment and the encouragement to practice like this.
Yes, experiencing parts of yourselves that you don't know that you would have accessed any other way other than through working in the privileged environment.
Yes, yes, yes. As you know, you're not often asked to do things that you're really good at.
Yes.
You're often asked to do, you know, whatever needs to be done, whether you know how to do it or not, you know?
Yeah.
And so it just kind of requires stepping beyond perceived limitations and just going ahead and doing something that seems like it might be hard or like maybe you don't want to do it or whatever.
Yes. And I really like how you phrased that as perceived limitations.
Yeah.
Because oftentimes, you know, I will look inside and see limitations, and they're true and real limitations, or so I believe. And from there, I can know who's looking at that. And
exactly.
As you say, in the environment that you're working in, you're required to look at that and question that.
Yeah, particularly because, you know, that's your assignment, and it's not like you can say, I can't do that. I don't know how to do that. I need something else to do.
Uh-huh.
You take your assignment and it forces all of that to come up. I mean, it doesn't force it to come up. It just comes up.
Yeah.
And then we get to see all of that and then go ahead and take the next step and move into doing it. And time after time, what my experience is that limitation was just something the voices were saying, and there wasn't really much truth in it, if any.
So time after time, as you go forward with that task, that limitation was really just something that the voices were talking to you about and trying to talk you into.
Mm-hmm.
And as you went ahead and did it, you found out that it wasn't true.
Yeah. Yeah, so I just feel like the luckiest person in the world to go to work every day and look forward to a challenge and an opportunity all at the same time.
Challenge and an opportunity all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like the universe is presenting you with a wonderful deal.
I couldn't be happier.
That's fabulous. That's fabulous. Cameron, thanks for joining us tonight, and we're going to start and get ready for open air.
Okay, thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Cameron. Good night.
Okay. Okay, bye.
Good evening, and welcome to Open Air. I'd like to welcome Anne, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center.
Hi,
welcome,
Michael.
Anne.
Thank you.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. And I'm curious, you know, Sherry talks about the weather sometimes, and I'm curious about how it is in Murphy's these days.
Well, I don't know if it's just me. I have shared this thought with other people who have not agreed with me, so it could just be me, but I am actually completely enjoying this July because I find it much cooler than last year. We had three or four straight days of triple degree temperatures last year,
yeah.
You know, so it was like 112 for 3 days in a row. So this, we did have, I know Dave a couple of weeks ago, or maybe it was last week, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, mentioned how hot it was here. And it was hot for a couple of days. But, you know, it's one of those things where when you've experienced 100 degrees, 90 seems so cool.
Yes.
And I just enjoy the breeze. I'm just having the experience over and over again of, wow, I'm so glad it's not as hot as it was last July.
Yes.
And maybe it's all made up in my head.
Yes. Yes. Wonderful. Not quite as hot as last July, and you're really enjoying it.
Yeah.
Great. Great. And we have a caller here, and I'd also like to give out the phone number, too.
Okay.
If you'd like to talk with us tonight, that number is 888-4-SANGHA. And we'd love to talk with you tonight. Just dial that number, and we'd be glad to have you on the air. And we have our first caller here. Okay, our first caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Good evening, Michael. This is Beth.
Hi, Beth.
Hi, Anne. It's been a while since I've spoken to you. And I have called quite a bit recently, and I've kind of was not planning on calling, but I could really use some guidance.
Okay. What's going on?
Well, well, I've been seeing how I cause myself to suffer. And attachment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing this thing where I'm not doing it. It's kind of like a gardener. And a couple of years ago, I did a rummage sale and nobody came. And then I did a follow-up rummage sale and people came, but it was kind of just your traditional household sale and it was to help a client and it kind of worked. But it kind of came about that, you know, this space opened up to do the rummage sale and now at the last hour, it may not even happen.
Oh. So you made these plans to do a rummage sale and now it might not happen.
Well, yeah, there's a whole story that goes there. But just to kind of skip over the story and go to the part that, you know, that I've kind of seen with this.
Mm-hmm. The part about how you caused yourself to suffer?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
About how...
Crucial part.
I've put in probably about 30 hours on this project.
Uh-huh.
And it's just been kind of... and it's just kind of grown. And it's gotten a little bit scary. And then I got this call that said, you know, it didn't get the final approval of the right person, and the space may not be available.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a real part of me that was kind of, like I go to chaos in order to survive. And as, you know, kind of seeing the dance of the six, and kind of, you know, it's like, you know, the fear reaction. But the main part for me is I really wanted to give something back.
You really want, and Beth, can I just say for folks listening who might not know what you're talking about, when you say the dance of the six, you're referring to the Enneagram.
Thank you.
A personality type on the Enneagram.
Right, which is basically showing me who I'm not, but the traps that I get stuck in.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the traps that I get stuck in is fear.
Mm-hmm.
And
which is one of the traps we all get stuck in.
Right, right. Everybody, everybody does. But kind of like there's like all these different layers about what a failure I am.
Huh. So the space isn't available, and then are you saying that then what the story is that kicks in is that you're a failure because it's not going to happen?
Yes.
And somehow it's your fault.
Not just a failure.
You should have done something differently in order
for
it to
work. And I'm such a fool.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are again.
Mm-hmm.
And what it means about me, but it also, the piece that's kind of like stinging the most is I really don't have a lot of money to give, but I can, you know, give time. I've got a lot of time. So I've kind of done this to raise money for the project in Africa. And I just hate the idea of not being able to send anything.
And what does it mean about you?
Oh. Well, if I were practicing, this wouldn't have happened, which is totally nonsense.
Uh-huh. If you were, so it basically is a general rendition of, if I were just doing it right, then life would be right. Life would go well if I was the right person.
If
life isn't going well, I must be the wrong person.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then it's kind of like watching how last evening, the anxiety got to such a level that I just kind of found myself reaching for some of my numbing devices.
Mm-hmm.
And finding that at 1 o'clock in the morning when I had put myself to sleep, you know, just kind of, then there was nothing between me and the anxiety. And then kind of and then operating with the belief that if I don't get a good night's sleep, I'm not going to be able to function.
Mm-hmm.
And then finding that
so it really
space.
Got you twisted up in knots. Mildly.
Yes.
So let me make sure I'm with you, Beth. So you spent about 30 hours organizing this rummage sale to raise money for Living Compassion.
Yeah.
And to go towards the projects in Africa. And then right at the end, you got this information that the person who had to sign off on the space hadn't or whatever. And
I didn't even know this person had to sign off.
So now you're in a situation where you might not have the space and the rummage sale might not happen.
But it also puts me in the place of, if the rummage sale happens, I need help. I can't do it myself.
Mm-hmm.
I have like a day and a half to unpack a house. I can do it in 2 weeks. I can't do it in 2 days.
So this triggered all of this self-hate.
Oh yes, and all this self-doubt. I can't do it myself, and the universe isn't going to provide help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's
so
just
kind of
basically
a doom and gloom.
So I just have to throw up my hands and be a failure.
And what I'm saying is that this is a familiar place that you get to with lots of different content in life.
Yes, but also seeing how attached I am to this vision.
Uh-huh.
And
you've got to appreciate the irony in the fact that this project is for an organization called Living Compassion. And
who has given me so much.
And where it's ending up for you is in a bundle of self-hate. So you're getting how you cause yourself to suffer.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the contribution you can make is to see it. And so, Beth, if you know when you were up till 1 o'clock in the morning last night, it sounds like tied up in knots. What would be reassuring? What could be offered to that part of you who's just so anxious?
Yeah, it's.
She really believes this means something about her.
Kind of what's coming up is I read this quote a couple months ago about how even the muddiest pond, if left alone, will settle
mm-hmm.
and clear.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like this just rehearsing going over and over and over in my head, and there's this feeling, you know, and I can just feel the tightness and the tension and the anxiety, and I've got to solve it.
Yeah.
And it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, the I, when you have to put that in quotes, the I, the conditioned self, has to solve it. And what happens is then you get pulled up into your head, into this story that just repeats over and over and over and over again, and all it does is stir up all this anxiety inside of you.
Right, and the rummage cell becomes mine as opposed to something that I'm participating in.
Yeah,
and
yeah. Yeah, it becomes something that you, it means everything about you. it all depends on you. It becomes this huge drama of, you know, what does this mean about me? If it's, you know, if I fail this, if, you know, the agony of defeat, the thrill of victory, the whole drama that gets involved with it.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So your sense is, if you could let those, that muddy water settle, if you could step outside of that story that keeps on getting repeated over and over again in your mind, that would be helpful.
Yes, but there's still like the tightness and the fastness of the voice and the anxiety and the high energy.
Mm-hmm. And what happens to the breath in all of that, Beth? Because it sounds like you aren't getting any.
Yeah, I'm not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just, I mean, what I want to do is just take a nice deep breath and breathe right into the center of all that tension and let it go.
Yeah, and it's kind of like I finally fell back asleep, and when I woke up, I kind of saw that there was a path through there.
Mm.
But then as the day's gone on, the anxiety has kind of ebbed and flowed.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And then it's like, and then it becomes like this, wow. Yeah, and kind of like, no matter what happens, it's going to be okay.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like
it just may not be what I want.
Right. It's having to let go of your idea of how it's going to be.
Yeah, but there's some grief there too.
Mm-hmm. But what? No matter how it turns out, it's going to be okay.
No matter how. Because. Yeah, and it's like if I can bring the breath to the situation, it's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. And another really important thing to me is, you know, what you were saying and looking at how all of this means something, all the meaning that gets...
Oh, yeah.
When
yeah.
you started talking about that, it reminded me of Transform Your Life. Have you been working with that calendar that Sherry put out at the beginning of last year? I think today there's this great
I did it
story.
When I was at the monastery.
Yeah, there's this great story about, I think it's today, it might have been yesterday, about a pianist playing this piece, kind of a dissonant piece, modern piece, and after he was done, somebody said to him, "I don't know what that means. Could you explain it?" And so he played it again, and he said, "That's what it means." But it doesn't mean anything, you know? Mm-hmm. And to really be able to enjoy a meaningless day, okay, you might not, the rummage sale might not happen. It doesn't mean anything about you. It doesn't mean anything. And yet we can watch ourselves just get all worked up into a frenzy as that
survival.
Muddy water gets stirred up in the pond.
Yes. Yes, and then there's like this, I remember Jen once at the monastery using the analogy in group about clinging to a life raft in the middle of the ocean, just kind of trying not to drown, and then all of a sudden realizing you're a mermaid.
You're a mermaid?
Don't yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, and also what gets lost in all of that anxiety, you know, I'm a failure and all this stuff that it means about me is, the person who really had a sincere heart and put in all this effort and has been doing the best she can do to contribute however she can. You know, there's a sincerity there that gets discounted.
Oh. Yeah. And that's the part that, that's the grief.
Yeah, because she, you know, it's like no matter what she does, she ends up getting told that this means something horrible about her.
My computer crashed yesterday, so mm-hmm. It was just like, it just felt like the universe was closing doors.
Mm-hmm. So again, that means something. The
computer.
Yeah. What if it doesn't mean anything?
And it's back to the breath.
Yeah, because you know, this whatever's going to happen with the rummage sale will happen with the rummage sale, you know, and then there'll be the next piece of content. And what you get to see in this, like you started out with, is how you cause yourself to suffer. The process that you bring to life's content. And one of the things that is common for all of us is that, you know, playing the story over again and again and getting trapped in that whirlpool in our mind where we just get, you know, pushed and pulled all over the place, and there's no sense of grounding and openness.
No.
And I'm right here, I'm alive, it's okay, yes. It's all these catastrophes that are being told to us in our head that have nothing to do with anything.
Yes, I mean, I didn't have a computer for a large part of my life, but all of a sudden, I absolutely have to have it.
Yeah. So, you know, the work for all of us is to get out of that story, get out of our heads, get back into our body, and be here.
Yes.
And just finding the breath, just breathing into our bodies and really being here and getting out of our head is, in and of itself, is so reassuring. It's like, oh, I don't have to listen to that. I don't have to believe any of that stuff. And then if I'm here and I'm present, the next thing that's appropriate to do with whatever life content is here for us in this moment will present itself. It gets very hard to see that when we're caught up there in that story.
Yes. Yes.
But like you said, it isn't up to you, you know?
It's not.
The rummage sale will either happen or it won't happen. And can you, in whatever, with whatever happens, stay present with yourself? That's the opportunity in it.
It's very humbling.
Yeah. Because we want to enter a conditional relationship with life. You know, it like if it goes the way I want it to, then it means I'm okay. If it doesn't go the way I want it to, then it means I'm not okay. But what about life is going to go the way it goes, and I can be okay?
Yes. Oh, wow. Okay.
That's what we get to practice. We have an opportunity to practice with. And, you know, like it is humbling because it's a very challenging thing. You know, we all have our attachments to how we want life to be, and to find that center in the midst of all of that is very challenging, yeah. And it's our only hope.
That is so true.
Yeah.
Because it's only chaos out here.
Exactly. Well, there's only chaos in listening to that story. So you're essentially, it's like the rummage sale gets to be your mirror to see your process.
Yes. And part of my process is to not put myself out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like, you know, in putting myself out there and it not coming off, that, well, you just shouldn't put yourself out there. That was the mistake you made.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, I was going to say, of course part of your process is not putting yourself out there, because look at all the things it means about you when it doesn't go the way it's supposed to. You're a failure, you know.
What a fool I am.
Yeah, you're a fool. You know, if you had just worked harder. So, yeah, I mean, basically what it's saying is you need to make life really, really small to be safe. And that's not true, because no matter how small you make yourself, that process is still going to run and tell you you're a failure and you're a fool and why didn't you try harder. So, I mean, good for you, Beth, for challenging it. Okay, I'm not supposed to put myself out there? Fine, I'm going to put myself out there and see how this process works. Okay, the process works in that it means it gets attached to an outcome in life, and then when it doesn't go that way, it tells me it's my fault. So, okay, you know what I would do regardless of what happens with the rummage sale? Find another way to put yourself out there. You know, it's like, okay, conditioning wants me to make my life smaller. No, I'm just gonna keep on testing it. I can't go further than that line. Fine, I'm gonna go further than that line and see what it tells me.
That's okay.
And you know, the sad thing is, what I want to do is I want to, you know, find that cheerleader in you who's going to say, good for you for putting yourself out there despite all that, all of those lies you're being told about how you shouldn't. You know, what courage. That's great. Good job.
Wow. Yeah, that's totally terrifying.
Yeah. Do you have a sense of why that's terrifying?
Yeah. Yeah. Because it keeps me small.
Yeah, you're going up against conditioning. I mean, what if, you know, Sherry talks about a lot. I love it about, you know, go, you know, people will take really easy classes so they can get an A. Why not just take the hardest class you want because you're interested in it, and who cares what grade you get, you know?
Well,
so if you wanna go up against a system of don't put yourself out there, well, gosh, you know, get outrageous, put yourself out there in ways, you know, fail, you know, gigantically. Because you know, it's basically saying, okay, if you put yourself out there, then you have to do it right. There's all these standards you have to meet.
And if
you don't meet all the standards, then see, you shouldn't have put yourself out there. It was a bad thing to do. Get back and be small. And none of that's true.
It is risky. But
how so?
Oh, well, it's in an art gallery. It's not really an art event. It's kind of the complaint. But that's kind of the risky thing. And that's a whole story thing, and that doesn't need to go there. But it's kind of like I just got lost.
Well, yeah, because what conditioning does is it takes you to the content. And
yes,
it wants you to believe that it's risky to put yourself out there. Because
and that's where the anxiety is.
The content. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but it wants you to focus on the content to get anxious. And what you're doing is you can see that you've got this system inside of you that's limiting you, that's keeping you small. And so what you're doing is, okay, I'm going to go up against this system that says don't put myself out there. And it's risky because it's risky to conditioning because you're going to see through it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there is still like a path through this there's still a path through this. There's over 200 flyers out for it, so it's going to happen. Even if...
Yeah, and on the process level, the path through it is to be here.
Yes, I just saw that, how it's like, I saw the path through it, and then I immediately went into the content.
Yeah.
And that's not the path.
Right.
Because I see the path, and then I immediately step off of it.
Yeah.
Wow. I really appreciate your talking with me this evening.
Well, Beth, thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you.
and I hope you find the breath through all of this and find the reassurances that will support you.
Which Sherry's quote on the Daily Peace quotes was that's acceptance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just kind of like, you know, acceptance is the only way.
Yeah, and I think acceptance is acceptance no matter what we're accepting.
Yes.
Yeah, even
if it's not what it's not what I want.
Yeah, which
but
is,
it is what
another
it,
way to point at, it's the process.
It's the process.
So, you know, it's not up to you. You've done everything you can, and you'll continue to do everything you can, and it'll go however it goes.
And I'm not alone in this.
Yeah, and the important thing is to extend kindness to that being, that person, that part of you who is in this.
Willingness is the key.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you, Ann.
Okay, thank you, Beth.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. You're listening to Open Air. Tonight we have the privilege of Ann, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center, joining us and facilitating. Thanks for being here, Ann.
Oh, well, thank you, Michael, for hosting this week after week.
Oh, my pleasure. It's a great privilege, as you know. And we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
The Zen Blues Quartet is a collaborative music project celebrating life and the music of the blues. Good musicians and good friends coming together to make something really beautiful simply because we can. Zen Blues Music. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice, because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life, what a life, my mind, what a life.
visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
Michael? You know,
yes,
I have been listening to that commercial ever since it's been played on the air, and I have never heard that line in there when they're singing at the end. It's the only one I've got, and I sure do love it.
Oh.
But what a life, what a life. It's the only one I've got, and I sure do love it.
What?
That
you know,
is just great. And that's the first time I heard it.
I have not heard it either. And I'm a student of awareness practice.
So, I mean, that's just it right there. This is the only life we've got. Can we love it?
Oh, wow. Wow. I'm going to listen to that more closely after
the show. Just there's an argument for listening to something you've heard many, many times.
And yes, definitely. And, of course, you know, the practice for me of paying attention, there can be a conditioned story of I've seen it all, I don't need to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, as I continue to pay attention, everything is revealed to me.
Yeah.
More,
well, you know, I would have told you. I know that commercial. I've heard it. I know it. But that's the first time I heard it.
Yes. Like seeing it for the first time, hearing it
mm-hmm.
for the first time. Mm-hmm. And we have three more callers here.
Great.
Call, you are now live on the air.
And
could you please introduce yourself?
So, I mean, that's just it right there. This is the only
next caller, you are live on the air. Could you please introduce yourself?
Yeah.
Are you there?
Hello?
Are you there?
Yes. Hello?
You're now live on the air.
Oh, great. Hi, Ann.
Hi.
Hi. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is Bree, San Francisco.
Hi.
Hi. I have two things, if we have time for both. The first one is I go to the Meditation Weekly group here in San Francisco, and when I go into the meditation room and sit down, I get comfortable on the pillow, and I do some waist stretches, like a twist, like a yoga, and get myself focused on the pillow. And that day, the facilitator, during the beginning, we have announcements, said, you know, that any stretching should be done before you enter the room.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember that as part of the guidelines. I don't remember when I've been to the monastery being told that, if I'm remembering right. It's been a while. So I wanted to ask about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And can you say a little bit about what's going on for you in terms of your process with that?
Well, I do it because it really does help me get on the pillow. Just helps me get focused, and it really does work out some of the tight places that I'm aware of that, and that occur because of now I'm sitting rather than just moving around like usual,
mm-hmm.
sitting in this position on the pillow. So, you know, I of course want to continue, but I wasn't clear. It just kind of surprised me.
Mm-hmm. Well, the guidance is to not do yoga or stretching in the meditation hall,
mm-hmm.
and as the guide there said, to do it before you enter the hall. And sometimes you'll notice people, when they sit down, they'll take whatever posture they're going to take, and then they'll do a slight kind of unobtrusive twist of their body, but it's nothing big or
mm-hmm.
or noticeable. So you want to come in and be non-distracting.
Okay.
So if you can do whatever twisting or stretching you want to do before the group, that's the best way to do it. And then if you sit down on the cushion and you realize, I've got a kink in my low back, and you just want to do something non-distracting, that's fine.
Okay. The other thing that is something that's going on, I've been sleeping a lot, what I consider a lot, during the day. And when I say sleeping a lot, meaning I'll get tired in the middle of the day and I'll take a nap. And it could be anywhere from 30 to sometimes 2 hours. And so this started worrying me. This has been worrying me. And without going into a lot of details, I think I can say what the essential situation here is for my mind. Mm-hmm. And it's been going on for almost 2 weeks. Okay, the way the guidance is, from how I hear it, is just observe things. Don't try to figure it out. Don't, you know, watch when you feel you've got to do something, get a plan, take an action. So what I've been aware of is, I mean, I have a lot to do to get done during the day. So I feel like, what's the word? Not quite anxious about I'm doing this, but it definitely doesn't feel right. It doesn't settle right with me because I should be doing something else.
Wait,
And
you said it's been going on for about 2 weeks?
Yeah.
And you'll sleep from about between 30 minutes and 2 hours.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And are you aware of anything that triggered it?
Well, that's the thing. There were a few things. And I guess first this comes down to the one of the questions. It seems like the right thing to me to look back and try to figure it out. You know, look at, maybe it's not figuring out then. Maybe it's just looking back and tracking certain changes or activity. So that's not really figuring it out. It's just observing, going back and observing.
Well, I think there was a clue there when you said it seems to me the right thing to go back and try to figure
mm-hmm.
it out or look at it. Because it sounds like there might be somebody who's concerned about doing it right.
Well, yeah. Yeah, because like I said, there's that's the word I'm looking for, conflict, that there's a lot to do, a lot I want to do, I believe I want to do, and now I'm sleeping.
Well,
and
I was actually referring to there's a person who wants to approach this whole looking at sleeping.
Uh-huh.
You want to do that right.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that, but
yeah.
You know, that's interesting.
I mean, yeah, because you'd say, you know, you think that might be the way to do it right. Because it's, you know, whatever you can, it's not like there's rules about how to approach your life. You can experiment, you know, try one thing, see what happens, try another thing. Do you want to look at, were there triggers with this? Did something, you know, maybe
mm-hmm.
did I, who knows, maybe I've got a virus I don't even know I have, or maybe I.
Well, there are things that I'm looking at that changed. But, you said something. I think that is true. I want to know the right way.
Yeah.
I hear that. I do that a lot. I didn't see it.
Yeah.
This.
Well, it's a process that points at both your questions, really. It's, okay, what's the right way to do this? I want to do it right. And you have a sense of what you're told you'll get if you do it right?
I'm not sure I understand what you mean. Well, I don't see. I do have a sense of it.
Well,
of what I'll get when you said what I'll get.
Well, for me, it would be like if I do it right, it's either going to be something I'll get or something bad won't happen. So if I do it right, then something bad won't happen. Whatever the bad thing is for you, and I'm just speaking for myself.
Yeah.
I don't know what it would be for you. But, you know, it's what you're looking at is a very common process for us humans, and it comes from childhood conditioning. If I can just do it right, I mean, for me, it would be, in a childhood language, it would be, then I won't get yelled at. You know, then
uh-huh.
I won't get hit, then I won't get in trouble.
Okay. That's definitely helpful. As you were talking just now, though, I was thinking, but I don't want to be taking naps in the middle of the afternoon.
Uh-huh.
And my body is, it's just like really, I'm overwhelmed by that.
Mm-hmm.
So I do go back at a long time ago when I was just a little girl and would use sleep sometimes to escape. And I wonder, you know, I'll go back to that story and bring it into this and think, well, is something coming up? I'm repeating it now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I will think, well, is this the right part? Is this what guidance says to do?
Uh-huh.
Then I'm there. Then I can see now I'm in that. Now I'm wondering if the what I just said is so.
Is
that's
right?
Interesting.
Is this a spiritually correct way to approach my life?
Well, in a sense, sense, but, you know, having, basically I use this practice as my guidelines. This is very much how I, go through my life now, trying to determine, you know, what's going on or how to proceed. Mm-hmm. So,
but what I hear, I don't know if you hear this, what I hear is somebody who's going up into her head to try to figure out what's the right way to approach.
Yeah, that. And my reaction to that is, where else would I go?
Yeah, and do you have a sense of that? Where else?
Well, I was thinking the other place, of course, is the body, but my body's asleep.
Uh-huh.
So if my body is asleep, that's where I am.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's a lot that happens before you go to sleep. I mean, you start to get tired. There's some decision of, oh, I need to, you know, something happens where you end up in a bed or wherever you're on a sofa or wherever you end up to take that nap. So it'd be really interesting to find out what's going on there.
See, I thought I was trying to do that and haven't had much success.
Mm-hmm. And how have you tried to do that?
Pretty much how I've described. Like, I was thinking back on my childhood. I realized I was starting to drink a lot of milk with coffee, so the tryptophan in the milk's been making me tired.
Mm-hmm.
So these are all part of your suggesting in my head.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's helpful information that there might be some physiological thing going on with milk and coffee that's making you tired. So you could experiment. Try not having the milk.
Right.
See what happens.
Right.
And, you know, it's not necessary to try to go back to your childhood to figure something out. You can just pay attention to what's the self-talk before you go take the nap. What's going on? How do you decide that you're tired and you need to go to sleep?
See, now that's where I get tripped up on what you're saying, because it is definitely an overwhelming feeling in the body of I'm just have to go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just tired.
Where do you feel that in your body? Just to really,
you know, it's really just overcomes my whole body.
Uh-huh.
That's how I'm remembering it.
And have you played with not having the milk? If you have a
not yet, not yet.
That might be interesting to try.
Yeah, today was the first day of that.
And the other thing is, you know, you said it overcomes your whole body. Mm-hmm. So just play with, gosh, if I was going to go to the epicenter of this feeling in my body, where would it be? You know, you can't do that from your head. You have to do that from your breath and start feeling how it feels in your body.
I like that idea because I haven't tried that. Yeah, I'm going to try that too. Well, thanks.
Just lots of different ways you can play with it and experiment.
Well, a key thing is being reminded, because from our conversation, and I really forget this, is I do go back into figuring it out. Like, that's so automatic.
Yeah.
And then,
we're conditioned.
What's that?
We're conditioned to go up the conditioned mind to try to figure life out.
And but that other piece that you picked up on is that's then my reality right then. Now I'm figuring it out.
Yeah.
I mean, I was almost like moving out of.
No wonder you're tired.
Yeah, it just is a reminder of how subtle and how minute the next thing is, and how amazing it is to be able to grab it if you are.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, it is kind of extraordinary to me when I really realize that it's so incremental and how easy it is to just leap away.
Yes.
Yeah. So thank you, Anne.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Bree. You're listening to Open Air. Tonight we have special guest Anne is a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. And let me give out the telephone number here. If you'd like to join our conversation tonight, we'd love to hear from you. The number is toll-free in North America. That's 888-472-6442. Again, that's 888-472-6442. And we're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll be right back.
Okay.
Watchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have two more callers in the queue here.
Great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Rebecca from Texas.
Hi, Rebecca.
Hey, Ann. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Well, I was prompted to call after I was hearing Beth, and because I could so relate to a lot of that, and it brought up some of my own conditioning and helped me see something that I just really wanted to look at, and that was how my conditioning has gone to the other end of the spectrum. It's like it got tired of saying you got to stay small and don't put yourself out there, and now it's saying you got to put yourself out there. You're not living a very big life. You got to do more. You got to be big. You were meant for great things, and blah 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 blah.
Which is so helpful, because then we can realize, oh, it's not about you, there's no formula you can take and apply, because if it's saying to you, you've got to get yourself out there, you're not big enough, get bigger, then you can say, oh, thank you very much, and just stay exactly where you are.
Well, yeah, you'd think that would be easy to see, wouldn't you? but that is the thing to see. Excuse me. But it was beginning to dawn on me that that was going on over the last, I don't know, maybe the last week or, you know, something like that. And to hear what Beth is saying, it just hit me that contrast with what had been going on in my life. So,
yeah.
But it really has been hard to catch on to because
it sounds
so
right.
Opposite.
Yeah, it sounds so opposite to what Beth's voice was saying.
Well, and what my voice was saying, too, before it turned. It's like it just did a 180. Because
don't put yourself out there. You need to be small. It's scary. And now it's saying, you aren't big enough. You need to get bigger. You need to do more things. You are meant for greatness.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, so if you catch on to it on one side, it just turns around and says the opposite.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm recognizing is that I kind of thought it was helpful. You know, I thought it was urging me to be all I could be, you know. And I don't know if maybe there was a sense of that, and then it got a little, it just got kind of
kidnapped.
Yeah.
Over by conditioning.
Yes, exactly.
Might
be what happened.
Yeah. Well, who knows? To me, what you're saying is such a good reminder that we can't go to sleep because there's nothing to nail down, and then okay, now we have the formula, because it's constantly changing. Conditioning is constantly angling to try to get in a position to control us.
Mm-hmm.
So there might have been a real sincere desire to be bigger and put yourself out there. In fact, it might have come from not wanting to be limited by conditioning. And then conditioning just steps in and uses it. And says, okay, you want to be bigger? Well, then fine. You have to be bigger.
Yeah. Yes.
Whenever there's a standard, we know that it's not coming from the heart.
Well, and it's also a really good indication of the just the nastiness of conditioning, that it takes something so pure and good that is in all of us, that is really what we are, all of us is, and just distorts it and co-opts it and, you know.
Yeah. Would you say, Rebecca, that in looking at this particular content, that there's a desire to want to be of service, to want to put yourself out there, to want to contribute, And so there was a movement towards that, and then conditioning came in, moved in, and made that a standard. You have to. You're not doing enough. You have to be bigger. You were destined for greatness.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's what it feels like. And it's like it's very I'm really getting clear on some of the things it says, because it's been so subtle in the back of my mind so far that I haven't really shown the light of awareness on it. But it was like saying things like, you're just not doing what you need to do. You're not taking the right steps to live a big life. You're not doing, it doesn't say enough, because I'm kind of on to that, you don't do enough. But
so now it's more, well, you're not doing the right thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, yeah, it really is cruel, isn't it? Because with that low-level voice in there saying that to you, constantly evaluating what you're doing, and kind of below the level of conscious awareness like it was before now,
mm-hmm.
you know, how could a person do anything except feel bad about their life?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. 'Cause, you know, and what's also interesting is I've been noticing the kinds of conversations that I have with other people that trigger that in me. You know, there's some people that, you know, I kind of think of as good energy people that really kind of encourage me and offer that reassurance. It's all projection, you know. And I hear myself saying more positive things. And then there's some people that I really let my doubt and fears much more take over my voice with. And so it's really interesting to see which people in my life I am with, who I am with each different person in my life, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, kind of what, how the externals reinforce particular self-talk inside of you.
Exactly, very succinctly put.
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's certain situations where there's more self-doubt and, oh, I'm not doing it right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doing it quite right. And other times where you're feeling okay about what you're doing.
Yeah. And what kind of has helped me clue into that this is self-talk and that there's something going on here was when I started kind of avoiding people that I really love, you know, those relationships that was reinforcing the negative self-talk.
Because, yeah, you'd feel bad about yourself in that environment.
Yeah, and so I had to stop and say, now, wait a minute, I love this person. Why am I not wanting to talk to this person? You know, why? And what's going on here? And so so it was a good kind of, it was a good tool to look at my own projections.
Because it sounds like what you have the opportunity to practice when you are around those people is, it's like they're a spotlight, or they're shining a light on a belief you have.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can approach it as a workshop, like, okay, I'm going to go be with this person purposely because I really want to hear what the self-talk is and what my beliefs are and what's going on here.
Yeah, it's kind of like a way to smoke out the fear, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that's a great image. Smoke out the fear. Yeah, and it really shows us why we talk about this as a path of heroes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of people say, who would want to do that and run in the opposite direction?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of identifying with those people right now.
Yeah, but to really take it on and face it, you know, full throttle. It's like, all right, here we go.
Yeah, yeah, because thank goodness I've seen through enough fear that I know how good it feels once it drops, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it sure feels real.
Yeah, and to it's kind of mind-boggling when we realize that the only thing holding that fear in place are the beliefs that we have.
Yeah. So let me say back what I think I heard you say, really talking to these people that I kind of have been sort of avoiding, I can approach it like a workshop that is in a way helping me recognize what the self-talk is around all this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like using the opportunity to have a mirror in this person, mirror your self-talk to you.
Yeah, and the self-talk really pointing to the beliefs and assumptions.
Yes.
Because when you were saying that just now, when I think of having a mirror, I don't like what I see in that mirror, what I'm really think I'm seeing as me when actually I'm just seeing my beliefs and assumptions.
Yeah, and that's why it's really a path of smoke, you know, the image of smoking out the fear and it being a path of heroes, because, yes, one of the things you'll see is the how you believe what you're seeing is you.
Yeah.
When what it is conditioning.
Oh, that's big. I mean, I can just feel it.
And it takes a lot of courage to basically look in that mirror and with open eyes, with the light on, and go, okay, I really want to see what's here. Because what stops us is we do believe it's us.
Yeah. Yep. Boy, that is that. I mean, when you were suggesting that just now, I just had this very physical reaction. Right about the third chakra, like the right in the. Let me see, right in the middle of my stomach.
Like tightness or being hit or.
Well, yeah, it was like the idea of. Let me see what triggered it. It was. When you said we see that and we think it, that's really who we are, because there was that belief that yes, that is really who I am. You know, I think that's what it felt like.
Mm-hmm.
That one belief just kind of grabbed me there for a minute or something.
Yeah, and I don't know if this helps you, Rebecca. I know it certainly helps me to realize that, you know. So it's kind of that sickening dread feeling and that that nauseous. That's what I project on it. Feeling nauseated. It's like, oh my gosh. And what we're doing, at least this helps me find the willingness to smoke out the fear, is we're freeing up that person inside of us, our true nature, that is bound by these beliefs, and to believe that, you know, that our true nature is conditioning, which it isn't, and we're being that warrior who's going to go in and basically prove to those little parts of ourselves that there is nothing wrong with them, even though all those beliefs would say there is.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of goes back to the we'll do for the love of others what we won't do for ourselves. If we can think of those parts of ourselves as other in a sort of sense, you know.
Yeah, as little kids who really need a big person to come in and show them the way.
Yeah. Well, that's helpful, and thanks for just kind of letting me, you know, you're like just holding a mirror real steady, and I really appreciate this opportunity, so thank you, and thank you, Michael, again, for your willingness to host this. I appreciate it very much.
Well, thank you for calling, Rebecca.
Yeah, y'all take care.
All right.
You're very welcome. Thanks, Rebecca.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
I love that when someone listens to an interaction on the radio show and then sees what they see about that in their own process, and then calls and then says, oh, this is what that triggered for me. This is what I'm seeing.
Yes.
So rich.
Yes, definitely. And I love those really kind of in-the-moment awarenesses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I could really relate to the physical sensations in the body and what it means and all of that.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And we have one more caller, and we have about 7 minutes left here.
Okay, great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Kieran calling from Vancouver.
Hi, Kieran.
Hi. I was listening also at the beginning of the show, and what Beth was talking about absolutely is where I'm at. And it did sort of inspire me to call in and just check in with what's going on for me. For me, it's like the stakes are a lot higher externally, it would look like, where there's just so much chaos happening in my life situation. And it's all very survival instinct based. It's my livelihood is... suddenly being very compromised, like, you know, like it's all crumbling apart, and I'm suddenly faced with having to get some surgery done, and there's big costs involved with that, and huge other questions, and there's just sort of a continuation right now of like this storm that's been going for the last month of just as soon as I can get one fire out, another one starting somewhere else, and they're all really like, you know, my health, my money to live, you know, stuff like that, like real core stuff. And, man, I can just see inside of it, it's so far out of my control that it's like the only thing I can do is breathe and try to stay in this moment because I can't, because it's just pure hell as soon as I get out of this moment.
Yeah, it seems all the content in your life is just being thrown at you so quickly and largely that it's challenging every notion you have of the illusion of control.
Totally.
Yeah, and the
and I get to really get pulled on my survival instinct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because most of the time
like
in life,
question.
We can kind of go along believing, well, I kind of do have control. I mean, kind of the illusion of control isn't an illusion. I do have control. And then things like this start happening, you know, one after the other, and it's like, oh, my heavens. The only way is to stay right here and breathe.
And it's so hard. I mean, it's so beautiful to hear you say that. Just to even hear someone say that right now is so like, oh, okay, right, that is right. Because everything is so questioned, and there's these stories that go on that say I'm such a failure. You know, like I can't even figure out how to pay my own bills. I completely lost and failed at life, you know. I don't even have enough to put together to cover my own surgery that's coming up. And, you know, and all these things are coming up, you know, but what an incredible fail. I just failed at everything, you know.
So on top of all the challenging content in your life, you've got all that self-hate inside, basically. It's very similar to that saying, what it means about you, which is you're a failure. Because if you had just done it right, life would go right.
Yeah, I wouldn't be faced with these challenges. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, the sad thing to me is, I mean, what a person like you needs in a situation where all of this really challenging content is being thrown at her is a really good friend, someone who's going to be there with her and support her through it and help her breathe, help her stay right here. Because that voice saying, well, you blew it, what a failure you are, is not any assistance. At all, not helpful at all.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. It's that desperate, it's a desperate kind of call to be like of control almost in that way, because it's like, oh, you could be in control, you just messed it up so badly.
Oh, that's interesting. What I thought you were pointing at, which feels true to me as well, is that system can't control the externals, so it's just going to batten down the hatches even more with the self-hate because it can control you. You're a failure. You have to believe me. See, it's all your fault. So that condition.
No, which is could be functioning also, could be what's going on. And inside, like way in the back, of course, there's this calm clarity that's going, well, I have no idea how this unfolds. It's so far out of the realm of what I know and where, you know, and all I can do is the next day and the next day. And you know, I have a beautiful apartment and it's really comfortable and I've got some time on my hands, you know, like, well, this 5 minutes sure seems like I'm still here. So, okay.
Yeah, it's kind of, okay, this is what I can practice with at this moment.
And it feels like it's actually really true, like that it's almost like it needed to get this big for to root out and really question and challenge the survival instinct.
Yes, in a sense, yeah, that in a sense that life is very, I can't think of the word, gracious or generous to offer you this situation where it's, again, that mirror, and that's a great term, rooting out. What are all those survival mechanisms that really are not serving you well? Because, you know, as you were talking, I thought, we really do. It's kind of like that situation where until we're forced to just live each moment and let go of the illusion of control, we're not going to do it. You know, we're going to cling to it. Because what if when nothing's going on in life, you know, it's a beautiful day, it's a beautiful life, can I just breathe and take each moment and not try to control life. Let life live me, because I really have no clue. We don't know. And life is so much more glorious when we don't get in the way. But it, like you said, it takes kind of these catastrophes to jerk us out of our attempted hold on life that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the thing, the picture, right, it's like I can, at any moment, where exactly it's a gorgeous sunny day. I live right by the ocean and by the beach, and you know, like there is all this beauty in the moment. And at any one of those moments, I could tap into this whole stream that says, and you know, I'm on destitution doorstep and I have no idea where the income's coming from and I'm going to be out for 2 months in surgery. You know, it has all these terrible, like, and then I won't survive.
Yeah, that.
And then I'll be homeless and broken and you know, blah, 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 blah.
The catastrophe story.
Yeah, the huge catastrophe story.
When right now, like you said, right now, right here, I'm fine. It's a gorgeous day. Look at the ocean.
I'm privileged. I'm deeply privileged in the right now.
And that you have a diagnosis and that there's something people can do for it. Now, that's incredible, too.
Oh, yeah. There's so many ways that it's actually, it's outside of my realm of know-how, but it's okay.
Yeah, and so it's really the same for all of us, regardless of the content. Can we get out of that story that wants to make life into a problem and a drama, and can we be here and enjoy the only moment we have?
Yeah, it's so hard to do it right now.
Yeah, well, that's the work for all of us. The opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Just breathe. It's so fabulous, though, just to even hear your voice on the other end, just affirming that that's the place, you know? Because there is such a strong, that survival instinct is exhausting me. Like, my days are exhausting because I'm always ready for which way do I move? Which way do I move? Which way? How do I solve it? How do I solve it? How do I solve
it?
You know?
And when you said that, you know, to just breathe, what I went to was the miracle of breathing, the miracle that we have a body that breath can enter into, that we have the ability to be aware of that and to feel it and to experience it. I mean, it's all just so miraculous. And we lose that awareness because we're up there in that. I mean, you know, how many breaths a day are we never even are aware of because we're lost in a story? The miracle of having a body, of being able to be a sentient being and experience life on a sensate level, it's just amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's deeply okay. Like, it's okay.
Deeply okay, that's a great way to put it. Yeah, and it's like the breath is our the pathway back to that deep okayness.
It's sure there when you get there. When you do, like right now, just breathing, it's like, oh, yeah, right.
Yeah.
The
so
exhaustion
it's like
and stress is a choice.
That breath can be that compassionate companion that can go with us through life as we have no clue. You know, we are in control. It's just life's going to go the way it goes. And can we be here with ourselves?
Yeah, and can I let go of there's a me that was supposed to succeed and win something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you for calling in.
Grateful to speak to you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was nice. I haven't seen you since I was last at the retreat or last at the center, but it's nice to hear your voice and have that wisdom and kindness. Thank you.
Well, good luck with your surgery and take good care of yourself through the process.
Thank you. Good night.
All righty. Good night.
Good night. Thank you for joining us. And I would have to say that this show, again, is a miracle also every week.
Isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. The opportunity for all of us to remember.
Yes, yes. And as Karen said, I am deeply grateful for you being here and the reminder and the wisdom and the kindness that you bring to me.
Well, it's mutual, Michael.
Wonderful. Thank you, Anne, and I look forward to seeing you and talking to you soon.
Okay. Thank you, Michael. Bye-bye.
Good night.